Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Today we have a new story by Anne Stringer. And we are thrilled to have Allie Groves return for the narration. Allie previously appeared in Sacrifice here on Variant Frequencies. Now, on to our story. Last Flight of the Esperanza by Anne Stringer. 15 ships left Earth in search of new places for humans to live. When the Esperanza 15 crashes, only one of the crew is left alive. How will she survive when she is the only human on an entire planet?
Day 15. I will never see another living human again. Charles would have said it's in my nature to be pessimistic, but I think this time I'm right, and Charles is dead. I found this notebook in the hold, and I've decided to keep a journal. It starts on day 15 because I'm now the sole survivor of the Esperanza expedition. To this point, I have been busy caring for Charles, burying the dead and making attempts to fix something, anything, in what's left of the ship. So far, I've had no luck. Even if communications could be restored, it's doubtful now that a rescue would be mounted for a single survivor. I am merely an engineering technician. It would not be cost-effective. I knew the risk going in. Still, one must try. President Yu gave a very stirring speech before we left. It was time for humanity to spread our wings, take flight, reach the stars, or some such shit. We had already colonized the Moon and Mars in clustered domes, but after the disaster at the aptly named Mare Crisium, it was decided that further colonization should take place on worlds with breathable atmosphere. Humans within a sealed dome on an airless body are simply too vulnerable. Equipment failure, or, as in Crisium's case, a stray meteor, can result in mass extermination. Naturally, the same can happen aboard a spaceship, but the crew is prepared to some extent for it. Crisium had families facing a sudden vacuum. Scientists, the ones who work in labs behind telescopes and charts, found 15 planets that looked promising. We, the explorers, would go look at them, and we would report back. One, or possibly two, would be chosen for colonization. Such simple considerations as wind speed and local flora and fauna could make a world completely unsuitable, and these were the things we would test. We learned as much as we could from orbit, and it was all positive. We decided to put down, which is when the trouble began. The upper atmosphere was more turbulent than originally thought. We could not keep up with the system failures. Most of us died in the resulting crash. Our ship created a clearing in the thick canopy of vegetation. It was unfortunate that our doctor was killed in the crash. Perhaps some of the others might have lived longer if they'd have had his expert care. I was the only one relatively unhurt, and there was precious little I could do for them. At Charles's urging, "See to yourself for once, Aineen," he said. I'd peeled off my flight suit 2 days after the crash and found I was covered in bruises. Today I looked again and they're mostly gone, leaving only faint traces of yellow behind. Charles lasted the longest. I tried to make him comfortable, injected drugs for his pain and fed him sips of water, but he would take no food. We spoke quietly in the darkness of night, when the twin moons glowed softly among the unfamiliar constellations. Last night he apologized to me for his lack of strength. When I awoke this morning, he was dead and cold next to me. My name is Aineen Shi. I am alone, the only human on an entire planet. Day 16. Why do I write this? Who will ever see it? While I had daylight, I tried again on the ship's systems. I worked my fingers bloody. When the light started to go and I found myself screaming and pounding on the battered hull with the spanner, it was time to quit. I used the laser to light a fire, using dead branches from the impossibly tall and thin vegetation that grows here, so that I will not have to face the darkness alone. Day 17. Dawn is a little chillier today. I worry that a cold season may be upon me. Clouds gather and rain begins to fall. I shiver within the hull of the ship. The tail section tore completely away in the crash, so I can look out and see water dripping from the vegetation. The ship is dead. I long for some coffee. After staring at the rain for a very long time, I come to my senses and realize that I will need water. I put out all the containers I can find to collect it. Then within the confines of the ship, I take stock. We came with enough supplies for a crew of 15 for a long trip. Some of the food supplies would be synth, naturally, but we were also aware that equipment can fail, so we brought plenty of vac packs. It's not Horté cuisine, but it's nutritious. Most of it was lost in the crash. Feeling disgusting, sweaty and smelly, I went out into the rain and found it surprisingly warm. I turned my face up into it and opened my mouth to it. It has a faintly sweet taste. The sand squished and foamed at my feet, so I scooped some up and scrubbed with it. It made my skin tingle. I hope none of the plants that brushed against my bare skin are poisonous. I no longer feel cold and move about the ship naked as the shower dries from my skin. Day 18. I don't recall falling asleep. My skin itches. It was a stupid mistake to rub soil and plant material all over it yesterday. I'll probably be a mass of hives. I slip into a clean suit, because today I must explore. Perhaps I can find some food stores, or determine if anything that grows here is edible. I'm afraid to leave the ship. What if I can't find my way back? Day 19. I am exhausted. My boots sink into the damp soil here, making walking difficult. The itching is now concentrated on my back, around my shoulder blades, and it's maddening. It's not easy to reach, and I feel bumps back there. The suit was irritating me, so I took it off. Exploration yesterday yielded little. The Esperanza 15 landed on the floor of a massive forest. The trees are so tall, the canopy so far above the ground, that I feel like an insect down here. The clearing we created by blasting through the canopy is beginning to close in overhead, already. I'm terrified of becoming lost, yet the very notion makes me laugh. I am, by definition, lost. There is no hope for me whether I'm in proximity of the ship or not. Still, I cling to it. I know I should be grateful that the climate is livable, even pleasant. And water is plentiful so far. I know I should be acting like a scientist. Charles was a botanist. Even as he lay dying, he would look in fascination at the plant life. I did catch a fleeting glimpse of some kind of animal on the trek back. Fleeting, literally. It did not look like a bird as such, but it was flying between the massive trunks of these trees. trying to climb them proved futile. Day 20. I can no longer stomach the VacPack food. It's tasteless, even compared to the water I've collected here, and I promptly vomited it this morning. Water alone will not sustain me long. The flight suit's too large now and feels too heavy to wear. Clearly, I'm losing weight and weakening. I don't fear death, and I wish only to be near Charles. I slept on his grave last night, lulled by the night sounds, the trees swaying in a light breeze, the odd musical sounds of unseen night creatures high above me. Day 21. I awoke this morning to the sounds of small creatures scampering away and taking flight. They're becoming bolder and I see more of them now. Every creature I see is able to fly, which makes sense here. Their food must be high in the trees and it must be difficult to gain purchase to climb these tree trunks. How amusing that I, who travelled light years through the stars, must now look up at them helplessly. I find fruit near my head. It's bumpy and light blue. It must have fallen from the trees. I sniff it, and then bite. Charles will be horrified. It must be tested, he would caution. It could be poison, it could kill you. But you are dead, Charles. And if I don't find food, I will soon join you. Some part of me still wants to live. The taste touches all aspects of my tongue's sense. It's sweet, it's salty, it's bitter all at once. I eat it all, casting the seed to the ground and licking every trace of juice from my fingers. Another hits the ground near me, then another. Why haven't I seen these before? Then I realise the creatures are dropping them for me. Are they trying to help? Are they trying to kill me with fruit they know is poison? Or are they simply playing Bean the Alien? It's an odd thought. I'm the alien here. I'm ravenous. I eat 5 of them. Day, perhaps 24? I'm uncertain. I have slept a very long time, and I am now only vaguely aware of the passage of time, of sunrises and sunsets, hunger and thirst. The soft brushing of a wispy something like spider's webs on my face woke me, and I found myself staring up at tendrils that dangled far down from a creature that floated high above me, yet below the canopy. It was beautiful, like a child's party balloon, complete with streamers. It floated away, having apparently found me uninteresting. It moved slowly, languidly, until a flying animal came too close. Then those tendrils moved with amazing speed, grasping and entangling the little beast, drawing it up to a centre I couldn't see. Perhaps I was simply too big for it. More likely, it didn't like how I smell. Fruit was piled near me by creatures that fluttered away when I turned toward them. My movements clumsy and slow, as if I was moving through water. I'm weary and weak. My skin is peeling, as if it had been badly burned. I am fair skinned, but I know this is no sunburn. Very little of that light reaches through the thick canopy. It must be a reaction to what I've eaten, or perhaps something in the air like pollen. The itching has turned to irritation, and then pain from my skin to my bones. I eat more of the fruit, which makes me sleepy, like a drug. Sleep is the only relief I can find, the only release. It will be fine with me if I never wake up. Day unknown. I am in terrible pain all over my body. My skin is peeling off in sheets. What's beneath is tender and oozing blood and serum. I cannot bear for anything to touch it, and even lying on soft bedding is agony. The ground is cooler, somewhat soothing, so I lie there instead, near Charles's grave. I used all of the analgesics on the others after the crash, and of course could not synth more. There is alcohol, and getting drunk sounds like an excellent idea, but I cannot keep it in my stomach. Only the fruit and its juice will stay down, but surely that is killing me. Either way, I am doomed. Another balloon creature floats overhead. It could be the same one I saw before. Its tendrils don't simply stream from it and catch prey, as I thought at first. It actually uses them to propel itself, reaching forward for a tree trunk, wrapping around it, and pulling itself in the direction it wishes to go. I imagine it floating on the air when it sleeps, and I wish I could do the same. Others, of a different species, hover and seem to look down at me as I look up at them. I call them kites, as their shape suggests. The body is long and thin, like a snake, but at one end outstretched arms, like the crosspiece of a kite, hold a membrane unfurled. It undulates in a light breeze, holding the creature aloft. There is a round head at the juncture of the arms and the body, and what appears to be eyes gaze down at me. I wonder if it is waiting for me to die, seeing my corpse as food, but I have only seen them eat fruit. The balloon moves closer to it, and it turns to fly, its membranes moving faster as it gains altitude. I believe this is my last entry. Perhaps it is cowardly, but the pain is unbearable, and I am weak and alone. I begin to doze, a welcome relief. I hope I do not awaken. It's unlikely that this will ever be read. I hope the other missions have had more success. Final entry. What seemed to be illness and impending death was merely metamorphosis. I write this from the roof of the canopy. Yes, I have achieved the treetops. It is unspeakably beautiful up here, and I doubt that I will ever set foot upon the ground below me again, though I do plan to return this book to the remains of the ship, in case humans ever again come to this place. These trees sway in even a light breeze, but my perch is secure and I marvel in the sights. Life abounds in the canopy. The balloons float aimlessly above the trees, their tendrils hanging limp as they rest. When they wish to descend, they release gases and drift slowly down. Another creature, looking like nothing more than a ruffled ribbon, flits from tree to tree, its body writhing in the air to propel it. Only moments ago I held a blue fruit in my hands, ready to bite into it, but I noticed a tiny hole in its flesh. Then it started to vibrate. I tossed it into the air, where it exploded into a dozen sparkling shards. Each flew off in a different direction, presumably in search of more fruit to infest. I don't begrudge them. Fruit is plentiful here. A kite swoops in and hovers before me. The mouth on top of its head opens, and it begins to sing. I don't know if that's its intent, but that's how it sounds to me. I've become friends with the little thing. Though I cannot communicate with them yet, I suspect they're very intelligent. I don't know if it thinks the same of me. The singing becomes very insistent, and I smile up at it, though I doubt the expression has meaning for it. It's apparently bored with my stillness. I have noticed sunlight glinting off water in the distance, perhaps an ocean. I will stand, spread my wings, and fly towards it.
Thank you for listening to Last Flight of the Esperanza by Anne Stringer, narrated by Allie Groves. To find out more about variant frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like variant frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Anne Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
Since the dawn of time, man has gathered around the campfire to tell stories that make sense of the universe. Slightly thereafter, other men realized they could take those stories and repeat them to others with their own snide commentary and get attention that way.
That was sort of a non sequitur.
She's attractive.
That's good enough reason for me to mention her.
See, I mean, the first connotation that comes to my mind when you say sulfur is a very, very bad smell. So I'm wondering if this mushroom has a bad smell and someone just decided, hey, maybe I can cook the smell out.
Sort of a very unpleasant, infinitely unpleasant experience.
It's pretty cool, though.
Moldauer in the Morning at moldauer.com. It's like cavemen around a campfire, but instead of a campfire, it's a podcast.